From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Gerald Christensen.
How do we measure the costs of war, especially the costs of war in human relationships? We could look at the Second World War, Vietnam, Korea, the First World War. The question is the same in every one of these conflicts, and there are many different ways to measure the costs, economic, social. But we propose today that we look at the cost of war in human relationships, and we turn to a battle and a war that is very familiar to us in this place where we are recording, the Battle of Gettysburg in the Civil War. Meet Tom Rutherford. He is our guest today. He's a licensed town historian of the Gettysburg Battlefield Preservation Association. They are distinct from the battlefield guides because they give tours of the town and talk about the people of the town and the places of the town involved in the battle. He has, before becoming a licensed town historian, spent a number of years on Wall Street as a portfolio manager. He is now retired from that profession and lives in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. The cost of the war, the Civil War, Tom, in human relationships. What was the situation on the first day? What was the general atmosphere that gives the setting, the context for human relationships?
Well, by late afternoon on what we now call the first day of the battle, July 1st, 1863, it was looking to everyone on the Union side that it was going to be still another Confederate victory. The Union forces were being pressed back through the town to the hills and fields to the south of Gettysburg, and close behind them were the pursuing Confederates.
And are there some stories in here? I can feel already the sense of tension that must be in the air, both the disappointment, but at the same time, there were some people who were probably in the middle of the spectrum and supported some idea of peace. There may have been some people on this side of the Mason-Dixon line who even supported the South. So are there some stories about human relationships that are loaded with politics, of that kind of politics?
Yeah, I think I've got a story for you, Jerry, that that will be interesting both on the personal as well as the political level.
And who do they involve, and what were the politics of that situation?
Well, the politics, first of all, both before, during, and after the Civil War in Adams County and in the borough of Gettysburg, were pretty passionate. People were very pointed in their political opinions and very unapologetic for their positions. That carried through right well beyond the end of the war itself.
And some of those positions were complicated by party, the new Republican Party, the Democrats, maybe some Whigs still around. You don't have to go into all the history. But then were there some copperheads? And if so, is it important to explain that?
Yes, it was suspected by many that there were more than we perhaps know folks in Gettysburg who, for a variety of reasons, had sympathies with the South. Remember, a great deal of the business done in Gettysburg was revolved around the manufacture of wagons and carriages, and much of that business was resulted in sales to slaveholding states like Maryland and Virginia. So for the period of time well before the war, at least commercially, the manufacturers in Gettysburg, the salespeople, had or at least acknowledged some of the stranger institutions of the South, for instance, like slavery, and had pretty much accepted it. So there was an understanding of the existence of these kinds of things, and if not an acceptance of it.
How far apart were the politics in some of these cases between, and who would they represent? The newer Republican Party would be pro-Lincoln and pro-war generally?
Well, I think the best way to illustrate that would be to point out that in Gettysburg alone, which had approximately 2,400 people in it as of the 1860 census, supported three weekly newspapers, and they were decidedly open in their political bias. There was one, the oldest one in Gettysburg, of course, was the Gettysburg Sentinel. It was the mouthpiece, if you will, at least on the editorial page, of the Republican Party, pro-Lincoln, abolitionist. It was offset by the Gettysburg Compiler, whose editor was obviously not a Lincoln man, and voiced the opinion of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And there was also a third called the Star and Banner, which leaned towards Lincoln and tried to run a middle ground. So mm-hmm. you can get an idea of the temperament of people, only 2,400 of them, that could support three newspapers.
Yeah, right. We have one now, and of course, it tries to stay somewhat neutral on those things. Must have been something to have all three of them operating at the same time. You could have a wide range of opinions expressed right in print. What's the story you wanted to tell us, and who's involved? Does it so happen that there is an editor involved in this story?
Oh yes. Going back to your question on the first day, as the battle is being fought right through the town of Gettysburg, one of the main choke points of the Union Army as they tried to escape the town into the hills to the south was Baltimore Street. And it was on Baltimore Street where the Gettysburg Compiler office was located. And as it came to be late afternoon of that day, among the many Union soldiers rushing down Baltimore Street was one colonel, Colonel William Dudley of the 19th Indiana Infantry, who in his retreat was wounded mm-hmm. pretty severely in his leg and fell down in the proximity of the office of the Gettysburg Compiler.
Right. Well, you should think that'd be a fine thing to do, because you're going to be helped by somebody who might come out of a building at that moment.
Well, not exactly at that
moment.
but shortly thereafter, when the town had been secured by the Confederates and the wounded were being looked after, the editor of the Gettysburg Compiler, in fact, one Henry Staley, a very unique individual, very opinionated, as I guess editors ought to be, and came out of his office, had already noted this wounded officer, and brought him back into the premises of the Compiler newspaper. Looking at his wound, which was very severe, and of course Colonel Dudley was in a great deal of pain, Staley took it upon himself to seek out a doctor. And as it turned out, within a few steps of Staley's office on Baltimore Street is located the Gettysburg Courthouse. Mm-hmm. The courthouse by that time, being a public building, had been turned into a hospital occupied by blue and gray wounded soldiers as well as medical staffs. Mm-hmm. And it just happened to be that the medical officer who came to Staley's attention was a Confederate doctor. Staley didn't make any distinction. He grabbed the first doctor he could find and brought him back to the office. The Confederate officer did what he could for Dudley and then returned to his main tasks at the courthouse. Mm-hmm. As it was, Dudley would remain with Staley, according to Dudley's statement, about 3 days and nights.
Well, that's a story in itself. A Confederate answers the call from a newspaper editor, he probably doesn't know who he was, and comes to exercise the healing powers on a Union officer, at least minimally, and then went back to his duties. He didn't refuse that service, saying you're the wrong side, the wrong color.
Right. It's probably unique to the Civil War that there was really no distinction made between soldiers by the medical staff. So they were treated one and the same.
Yeah, yeah. This is true also at the seminary, at the old dorm, wasn't it? There were Confederates and Union in there, and they were assisted at first by Confederate doctors and then by Union doctors when it was recaptured by the Union.
That was the experience throughout the Battle of Gettysburg and at any location in which that situation arose.
All right, the story is now of one of healing and reconciliation. Does it get complicated after that? Is there a story here about broken human relations or strained human relations?
Well, these relations were strained well before the battle, but they really showed themselves as a consequence of the battle. Staley's actions apparently were either learned of and perhaps observed by a woman whose name is Fanny Beeler. Fanny Beeler was the wife of David Beeler, who is a well-known lawyer, a prominent Republican in his own right, obviously a Lincoln man, and was currently serving in the patronage job of Postmaster General, if you will, of Gettysburg. He had left the town for fear of being taken prisoner and used as an exchange by the Confederates. So Fanny was at home. Now, like many of the Gettysburg women, she was already taking wounded into her house. But subsequent to the end of the battle, she leveled a charge that the Copperhead Staley, acting upon his Southern sympathies, had retrieved a Union officer only to disclose his whereabouts to a Confederate.
Mm-hmm. With the intention that he was going to turn him over or some such dastardly result.
That's correct.
Who is Fanny? I mean, outside of being, what about her character? David, we know, is a Lincoln man. He's a lawyer. He's had to get out of town because he could be valuable to the Confederacy. But Fanny, what about her?
Well, she's a pretty darn good wife. With the threat of the Confederates on the horizon, as close to Gettysburg as they were before they actually came into town, Fanny had always put a valise inside the front door of the house, filled with clothing. So all that David had to do was to grab it and run in whatever direection the Confederates are not coming from. So she was always, looking ahead for her husband's welfare.
So you told us about the charges. The man is aiding and abetting the enemy. Did these charges stick?
Well, there were some suspicions that there may be some political.
You think so?
Yes, but the short answer is yes, they did stick. In fact, Staley is arrested and subsequently spends time jailed in Fort McHenry in Baltimore until Colonel Dudley's located. He's recuperating now, back with the Union Army, and he issues a statement that Staley acted in good faith throughout the time that Dudley was in his care in the offices of the compiler, and during that time had made no expressions of disloyalty to the Union.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, upon that news, Staley was released and returned to Gettysburg.
No communication in those days, like telephone, television, cell phones, computers. So they couldn't find this. Lucky they found Dudley at all.
It was very lucky he was still alive.
And alive as well. But in the meantime, here's this newspaper editor who's trying to help somebody out and ends up in prison, and not only prison, but the notorious Fort McHenry. How did he feel when he came back? Do you know? I smell vengeance here somewhere. I can be forgiven for that.
Well, certainly political vengeance, but remember, these families were not exactly on speaking terms before the war. Not only that, as we've already said, the owner and editor of the compiler was Staley. As it was, prior to becoming an attorney, Fanny's husband, David, had actually worked for the pro-Lincoln newspaper, the Gettysburg Sentinel. So they were competitors at one time, both commercially and now politically.
Yeah, so there's plenty of tensions going on, and probably didn't have a lot to... In that context, by the way, weren't there some strong rivalries? I mean, anything physical as well as political? Were there ever clashes between the two newspapers or followers of the two newspapers? Or am I exaggerating that point?
I would say that there were probably fairly passionate arguments, but in the history of the time, I've not read of any alleyway fights going on.
Yeah, but they did like to cross swords verbally, and I suppose even in human psychology, some of that stuff went in deep and stayed down for a long time and came out in this case.
Most definitely, and it certainly heated up when the battle was not being fought in Virginia, but on your doorstep.
Oh, indeed. You said nothing. Nothing in the way of vengeance. You didn't send out somebody to meet Beeler in the middle of the night in a dark alley. Club in hand. Most of it was taken out in...
There was no contract put out by Staley.
You got the word. You're a New York man. I should have known you'd have the right word.
There was no contract put out by Staley for Beeler. It's often thought that Beeler was also, or at least Fanny Beeler, was also probably coaxed by one David McConaughey, who was probably the most radical Republican. There's two words you don't hear put together very often, radical Republican, in Gettysburg at the time. And he had a deep, deep animosity on a very personal level with Staley.
So these relationships get intertwined, or these lack of relationships get intertwined with other things, other persons, and other concerns. A radical Republican would be a person maybe like William Henry Garrison, very much want to take...
Thaddeus Stevens might be a
Thaddeus
good example
Stevens
on the other
good
side.
Example.
Yes.
Yeah. Make the Confederacy pay, I mean, monetarily.
That's right.
And,
yeah. There's a body of evidence that McConaughey was also acting for in the as an intelligence officer, if you will, For the Federals.
Oh, so he there was.
That's right.
They're accusing one guy of selling out this, of being a Southern sympathizer, but by someone who was a Northern sympathizer and probably a real spy. So it's one way to keep the heat off.
That's right.
Point your finger at somebody else. So this is all David McConaughey. Did he and Thaddeus Stevens have a relationship when they were in town?
I do not know. It probably would have been.
You would think so.
Would
yeah.
be a close one.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
Because of the political biases, but I really don't know.
Well, McConaughey would have been a Republican, and so was Thaddeus Stevens, wasn't he? At this point, because he'd moved off.
Oh yes. He had left Gettysburg, where he had been a fairly prominent attorney in his own right, and was now in Lancaster serving as a congressman.
Do we have any evidence at all of what happened to the three people involved here? Staley of the newspaper and Beeler of the competing newspaper. Do we know what happened to them afterwards? They went on to full lives?
They went on to full lives. They were in their 40s. I should say McConaughey and Beeler were in their 40s. I believe Staley had a few more years on him than that. One of the things I always found fascinating about Beeler, I mentioned that his wife used to keep a valise inside the front door just in case he had to skip town if the Confederates were coming. He did, in fact, as I said, skip town, if you will, and didn't stop in Hanover, Pennsylvania, didn't stop in York, didn't stop in Philadelphia. He didn't stop till he got to Elizabeth, New Jersey, which is where his mother-in-law lived. So he definitely got out of harm's way, left Fanny behind.
Look, by the way, this is one story out of several that you're familiar with, including children.
That's correct.
And they too were involved in this melee. Some of them just seeking adventure, others, in a sense, caught in the crossfire.
That's right.
But they too experienced the horrors of war, as well as
at a very young age too.
At a very young age. Some, yeah. You know, I think of the one who was became assistant to a physician who she was only nine, Sarah.
Oh,
was it Sarah?
Bushman.
And Sarah Bushman.
Yeah.
And she was asked at nine, asked by a physician, nobody else around, please give this patient a drink of water while I saw off his leg.
That's correct.
It was just one example of what she did all day long, apparently. And that was the youngest example I know from some of the story you told.
Yes. And in fact, after the battle, after in effect being forbidden by her father to return to these makeshift hospitals, in many cases, found herself doing exactly that. And serving as the littlest angel on the battlefield during that period.
The other one that fascinates me, again, I'd give you credit for this story, is Charlie McCurdy. That family had some Southern sympathies, and didn't they put up one of the federal Confederate generals in their home in Baltimore in Gettysburg after the battle?
Yeah, I Jerry, I'm not so certain if it was Southern sympathy so much. The general that you're referring to was taken to Charlie's father's home, Robert McCurdy, who was the president of the Gettysburg Railroad.
And the general was Isaac Trimble.
Of course, Isaac Trimble, before the war, had been a construction engineer for a prominent railroad. So they were both railroad men. I've never been able to make the connection politically, or I don't believe the claim was made by anybody that Robert McCurdy was a copperhead. Mm-hmm. I think it was simply shared professions.
In any case, it was investigated. I mean, that they were getting special. They were giving this general special treatment at the McCurdy house when, in fact, a lot of the Union soldiers were suffering terribly without that consideration.
Yes, you can imagine the people, the sensitivities of the civilians at Gettysburg were aroused when they learned that a Confederate general was in a home. When Union soldiers were being treated in the field, for instance, up at the Lutheran Seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it was demanded of McCurdy by the Federal Army to return him to
the seminary, which did not make him happy. He was comfortable in a very nice home in Gettysburg and get stuffed in some dormitory room in Old Main.
That's correct.
He was not happy. We're making light of this, and we shouldn't in some sense, because when you think about the warfare nowadays involving so many innocent people, The one great tragedy, the one death was Jenny Wade. None of the civilians we've talked about actually suffered loss, but the tension was in the human relationship. What has this kind of told you? What have you concluded about the nature of human nature?
Well, I kind of go into some of these histories that I read with some romantic notions that these folks abided by higher standards of behavior or levels of civility and virtue that's perhaps superior to our own in this day and age. But the more you read into the stories and you try to peel back the layers of behavior, you find that people back then, as good as they may try to be, just as we do, were just as petty or biased, prejudicial, troubled as well as troublesome as we find today.
The thing about human nature is that they continue to be human even in the time of war, as well as when it isn't the kind of war. And we tend to heroize them, make them heroes when, in fact, they're very much like us. Tom Rutherford is a licensed town historian with the Gettysburg Battlefield Preservation Association and a former portfolio manager on Wall Street. When you come to Gettysburg sometime, give Tom or one of the licensed town historians a call. There's more to the story of Gettysburg and the battlefield than just tactics and strategies. You'll find a lot more of these human and very humane stories if you do contact them. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers. Have a very good day.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.